Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S.? With more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S., they have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Make sure to go to timcast.com, click join us, and become a member to support this podcast and all the work we do. And you'll get access to exclusive uncensored segments from Timcast IRL and way more. Now, let's jump into the first story. Recently, I had this feeling of dread when I was looking at the news and I was reading about ghost donors. This is a phenomenon that I believe James O'Keefe had a large part in uncovering, finding donors listed in the FEC's own records who made something like 15,000 donations to various political parties and candidates, I believe to organizations, not individuals. And this means they're giving 10, you know, in one instance, a guy gave 10 donations every day for 4 years without missing a beat. Something doesn't make sense. And when you see this affecting our political system, you wonder how it is it's visible. How is it that you can go to the FEC, the public donation records, and you can see these clearly fraudulent donations using someone's name? I don't know. But it's scary when you think about it, because it means that our system has been fake for some time, or at the very least in the past 10 years. Certainly many of you agree. The sense of dread was not just because politicians are getting these donations. It's because the system is about to collapse. And if we're now discovering these holes, if we've already had a 2016 cycle where they rejected the results of the election, a 2020 cycle where the results of the election were also rejected. I'm not here to say, you know, who's right, who's wrong. We all know which side is probably wrong. We get it. We get it. My point is, you've got Democrats saying Trump is Russian and the election was stolen in 2020. Joe Biden stole the election. Certainly there are dirty games afoot. Me personally, you know my position. I think Donald Trump, no new wars. I can scream it to the high heavens. And so now I'm looking at 2024 and we see the majority of this country in the polls across the board, including Gen Z, are saying Donald Trump is the guy. Personally, you know, I spoke with the Gen Z business owner just the other day who told me that he can't believe it, but, you know, he's probably voting for Trump. He runs his own business and he can't afford anything. What's going on? And I said, I think it's the illegal immigration. I think illegal immigration is driving Gen Z to the right. And he told me that's probably it, because these people are getting free money. They're being given free money. They're being given hotels. What's going on? Well, we've known this for some time, that the Biden administration was flying illegal immigrants into this country. But now we have the overt admission. The breaking news was that we have this from Gazette.com. Biden secretly dumped 320,000 inadmissible illegal immigrants into U.S. cities. Interesting. Elon Musk says, the groundwork is being laid for something far worse than 9/11. After the Biden administration admitted flying 320,000 unvetted migrants into the U.S. has national security vulnerabilities. It's a terrifying headline. Now, Elon Musk saying it will blast it off in outer space. I can respect that. When Elon Musk speaks out as such a prominent individual, it does get these issues more screen time, which is important because, you know, we're seeing headlines based on the opinions of Elon Musk, despite the fact that you and I have been saying this for some time. So good. It's reaching that point. But something far worse than 9/11. I agree. Right now, you've got Macron doubling down, saying this is the French president. Boots on the ground in Ukraine. if we must. Russia is saying we will use nukes. I'm paraphrasing, but we get the point. Macron said we will not let Russia win, even if that means we put boots on the ground. Vladimir Putin said, are they insane? We have nuclear weapons and we will use them, or something to that effect. Something worse than 9/11. I hope not. But without vetting these individuals with a mass open border, they have laid the groundwork for something truly devastating. Democrats are screaming and crying that Republicans barred their border security bill, which is a lie. The bill in question was actually predominantly funding for Ukraine, Israel, and it had some border amnesty provisions. It would have given CBP the ability to adjudicate asylum claims without the courts. Now, one could argue this means they turn them away. Yeah, it means they'd bring them in and give them work permits. Why would the administration shift course? That's the terrifying reality of what we're currently looking at. This border security bill was an amnesty bill that would have increased the amount of individuals coming in. And then when it was blocked, the Democrats can now say it's Republicans who blocked it. So what happens? If there truly is going to be some kind of mass 9/11 event or something like that, well, the Democrats are going to come out and say, we tried. We begged the Republicans, please. And they said no. And Donald Trump did it to win an election. How dare he? Yeah. And maybe Elon Musk is completely right, because that's a scenario. Everybody's got their predictions, their theories about how it's going to go down this year. Like, what's going to happen? The election. Because certainly the Democrats are not going to just let Trump run and win. There was a shadow campaign, says Time magazine. Why wouldn't there be a shadow campaign in 2024? So what will it be? I don't know. Elon Musk took to his platform X early Tuesday and said the president's administration is importing voters and creating a national security threat for secretly allowing illegal immigrants into the country. It is highly probable that the groundwork is being laid for something far worse than 9/11. Just a matter of time. The Tesla creator's comments come after a secret Biden program was exposed, where the administration admitted to flying 320,000 migrants into the U.S., but officials refused to say who was flown and to where. Lawyers for the administration's immigration agencies have claimed that revealing the locations of where these undocumented aliens are could create national security vulnerabilities. Right. The admission means that while record numbers of migrants were flowing over the country's southern border last year, the Biden White House was also directly transporting them into the country. The use of cell phone apps is allowed for the migrants' undetected arrival by air with no legal rights to enter the U.S. Yeah. It comes after a controversy over a 2022 transportation program in which the administration used taxpayer money to move migrants throughout the country on overnight flights. We know all this. We know all this. And it gets worse. I want to play for you this clip before we get into the national security risks, World War III, Civil War, whatever. This clip of Dr. Phil on The View, I think, needs to be heard. And I always should make sure we have that audio configured. There we go.
The head of the union. I ask him straight up, kids are coming over the border with numbers written on them, phone numbers and addresses. Do we check those out? He said, well, we call them. Is it possible that we're sending them into known prostitution rings or sweatshops? He said, it's not possible. It is absolute. We are using American tax dollars to ship children into known prostitution and sweatshops.
Some children.
Well, who knows?
Okay.
We don't know. I said, are you?
So what kind of checking do they do? So
they call the number and say, do you know about this child? They say, yes. Will you receive them when they come? Yes. I said, is it possible that that's a prostitution ring? He said, we know enough to know that it, in a number of cases, it has turned out to be absolute sex ring. It has turned out to be an absolute sweatshop. I said, how is this possible?
Well, what are they?
And he said, it is happening.
What are they?
Sonny Hostin followed up again in the segment and asked if the federal government was involved and if they reached out to the Biden administration. Yeah, that right there, that revelation from Dr. Phil, that's terrifying. It's terrifying because there are people who know this is going on and they work for Customs and Border Protection. If I worked at a fast food restaurant, flipping burgers, and I found out that out the back door at the corporate headquarters, they were using the money we made to traffic children to sex rings, I would quit. That's just me. I don't, you know, this is one of the most shocking stories, I think, that have come out in a long time. I want you to imagine what kind of person it takes to know that CBP is not only facilitating illegal immigration, human smuggling, but child sex trafficking. And there are individuals who work for the CBP who are saying, yeah, but not me. I just work for the organization and support them. I got news for you. This is how I described it. You work at a bar that's owned by the mafia. When the feds raid the mob and start arresting everybody, do you think they walk into that mob bar and say, you're just a silly old bartender. We have no beef with you. You're free to go. Laughable. They come in, they grab the bartender, smash him with a truncheon, throw him on the ground, cuff him, and then say, talk or go to prison. But I'm just a bartender, man. I don't know what's going on. You know something, and you better talk now. Why would, when, you know, I don't know that Donald Trump does anything about it. I don't. But why would any of these CBP agents believe that they can work for an organization that is engaged in child sex trafficking at any level, and they would be exempt from retribution under the law? There is, you know, let me put it this way. I don't know that there is a worse crime, area of crime than child abuse, from the lightest to the most extreme. And the reason for it is this. If an individual commits murder against, if an adult man kills an adult man, that is a very, very serious and one of the worst crimes. Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. But if individuals, organizations, or person are abusing children, that's worse. I believe that child exploitation is worse than murder. Why? Because these are the next generation of humans who will inherit the earth. And if they are traumatized, broken, and abused, it will expand the trauma and, like a prion disease, begin manipulating the proteins around it into collapse until the system can no longer survive. An individual being killed is bad, especially depending on who the individual is. A political leader can destabilize things. But corrupting the next generation destroys the system from the root and rips it to shreds like a time bomb. For CBP to knowingly do this, and they know, and for individuals to sit at a desk and be like, look, man, all I do is accounting for the child sex traffickers, and they won't quit. This is why I look at this and I'm just like, something bad is coming. Something bad is here. We knew that CBP was look, there are cartel members at the border with rifles handing off children and people they're smuggling. And CBP smiles and says, right this way, sir. Really? Would a human being not say, turn around? Now, of course, when Donald Trump tried to get to the bottom of these trafficking rings, the left claimed He was separating families. That's right. A man shows up with a little girl and she got a number written on her arm. And they're like, right this way, little girl, like, get away from this man. And the left goes, he's taking children from their families. I wonder about this. In response to Elon Musk, I meme therefore I am says he was flying illegals not only from the border deeper into our country, but from other countries into the U.S. That's right. We've known for a while now that Joe Biden was trafficking. That's right. Trafficking children on these planes. And if the revelation now is that CBP knows many of these children are going to prostitution rings and sweatshops, that means the Biden administration has been facilitating child sex trafficking. That's not a question. It's a fact. Dr. Phil. He's on The View. This is not some right-wing guy talking to the head of CBP saying, we know this is happening. The Biden administration has been sending these children on planes into various parts of the country. It's not a conspiracy theory. So I don't know. I don't know where we go from here, man. It's wild. We had this law in Texas. Texas temporarily was granted the ability to arrest illegal immigrants entering the country, but the Supreme Court temporarily blocked it. They're going to be hearing what's going on. In response to Elon Musk's post about something worse than 9/11 coming, one individual linked to what's called the Cloward-Piven strategy. Interesting. From Wikipedia, the Cloward-Piven strategy is a political strategy outlined in 1966 by American sociologist and political activist Richard Cloward and Francis Fox Piven. It is the strategy of forcing political change leading to societal collapse through orchestrated crises. The Cloward-Piven strategy seeks to hasten the fall of capitalism by overloading the government bureaucracy with a flood of impossible demands, amassing massive unpayable national debt, and other methods such as unfettered immigration, thus pushing society into crisis and economic collapse. The fascinating thing about this strategy is that they understand that unfettered immigration will lead to economic collapse. Bernie Sanders said in 2015, open borders will make your nation poorer. We know it. And they're doing it all right now. And I have to wonder why. Well, I can only assume it's because they are intentionally destroying everything around us. In the meantime, I'd like to highlight, well, where's the, do we have the tweet up here? The other day, in a 9-0 ruling, the Supreme Court said you cannot remove Donald Trump from the ballot. And what do we get? Immediately, Jamie Raskin, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Eric Swalwell, and other Democrats begin to make a bill to declare January 6th an insurrection and to make Trump ineligible. Now, some people have argued that you can't do that, that when this there's a clause, or basically the way the law works is, if a law goes into effect, it only begins from this point forward. So Donald Trump, who's already on the ballot, wouldn't be removed. But the next time a candidate is running, perhaps. And here's what I have to say. Jamie Raskin has more courage and zeal than the majority of the Republican Party. Democrats appear to be intentionally destroying this country. I would say many of them are literally intentionally destroying the country. You can watch them do it and see what they say. But many others just appear to be in on it. Republicans do nothing. I've sat down many Republicans on Timcast IRL, and I said, how come we have not gotten a May 29th commission? Why was there a January 6th commission, but no May 29th commission? And you know what they respond with? What's May 29th? Really? May 29th was the day that thousands of far leftists firebombed the White House, firebombed various areas of D.C., injuring hundreds. I should say 100 plus federal agents. And it was so shocking as they tore the barricades down in front of the White House. The president was forced into an emergency bunker, disrupting his official duties. Nothing. They called Trump Bunker Boy. They insulted him. They mocked and laughed at him as they set fire to St. John's Church. And Republicans don't even know what happened. Shocking. Now over at Wikipedia, they say Cloward and Piven's article is focused on forcing the Democratic Party, which in 1966 controlled the presidency in both houses of the United States Congress, to take federal action to help the poor. They stated that full enrollment of those eligible for welfare would produce bureaucratic disruption in welfare agencies and fiscal disruption in local and state governments that would deepen existing divisions among elements in the big city Democratic coalition. The remaining white middle class working class ethnic groups and the growing minority poor. To avoid a further weakening of that historic coalition, a national Democratic administration would be constrained to advance a federal solution to poverty that would override local welfare failures, local class and racial conflicts, and local revenue dilemmas. They wrote, "The ultimate objective of this strategy, to wipe out poverty by establishing a guaranteed annual income, will be questioned by some, because the ideal of individual social and economic mobility has deep roots. Even activists seem reluctant to call for national programs to eliminate poverty by the outright redistribution of income." The fascinating thing is, they're outright saying the goal is to destroy this country and subvert capitalism. And they're explaining that the way you do it is everything the Democrats have been doing. Now, I think people like Swalwell, people like Schiff, they're not necessarily in on the plan. They're just mindless zombies who will do whatever they think earns them their brownie points. There are individuals in the deep state who are clearly corrupt political actors, and that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. This admission by the Biden administration, it makes me wonder. When immigration is already the top issue, Donald Trump is already the front runner, and it's appearing as though we are going to get a Trump victory, why admit it? There are many theories and hypotheses about what's to come. I speculated several months ago that Biden will not be the nominee. There's no way he's going to have to drop out. Some speculated that by the end of March, Biden will not be the candidate. I don't know how. One theory I had is that Biden simply just has a heart attack on stage or something like that, collapses. Kamala Harris is Gavin Newsom runs on stage, rolling up his sleeves, providing CPR and saving the president's life. Kamala Harris assumes the role of acting president. And when asked if she will seek an additional term, she says, "I could not in good conscience try to run a reelection campaign in a time of crisis for this nation. I will lead this nation and I will let others run for the presidency." She gets to be the first female president, the first female minority president. Gavin Newsom takes Joe Biden's place. And that's how they are able to try and mount some kind of effort against Donald Trump. Gavin Newsom becomes the man who saved the president. He goes on TV, every station, and they say, "You saved the president's life. What does that feel like?" And Gavin Newsom says, "I was just doing what I'm here to do. Anyone would have done the same." Now, I don't know. I have no idea what happens. But taking Joe Biden out of the election seems to be paramount if Democrats want to retain power. Although I got to tell you, I don't know. I really don't. Because when I talk to a lot of these young people, periodically, it does not seem like anything's going to change their mind. Donald Trump is the guy. They can't afford anything. The system is breaking and illegal immigration is putting a strain on them. And they're going to vote for Trump. Unless something happens. Nikki Haley won't bow out of the race, and we have to wonder why it is. Is there a reality in which something happens to Trump? He's an old man. And Nikki Haley is the only one left running? This is the challenge with Vivek Ramaswamy dropping out. Because he said initially he would not, because he does not want the race to fall into Haley versus Biden. If something were to happen to Trump, were he to go to prison or worse. But now you look at where we are, and unfortunately, it seems like that's the reality. If anything were to happen to Donald Trump, the safety net for Republicans is Nikki Haley. That's deep state. That's the uniparty establishment winning. And maybe Vivek was right. The real play here is Biden's not the candidate for the Democrats. Nikki Haley is. Donald Trump will be convicted, or they're hoping he will. And then Nikki Haley will be the only one left standing at the Republican convention. She will be the nominee, and you will get riots. I don't know what happens to this country if Nikki Haley wins. I don't see Republicans being happy with and accepting a Nikki Haley victory. I don't see Democrats accepting that either. I cannot envision an outcome to what's going on. I just can't see it. The one thing I can tell you, it'll certainly be interesting. I'll leave it there. Next segment is coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. We may be experiencing a cyber attack on social media infrastructure, and the reason why this is important is that it is Super Tuesday. Right now, there are notices going out saying, don't forget to go vote. And many people have found themselves unable to log in to their Meta platform social media apps that includes Instagram, Threads, and Facebook. A lot of older people get their information on these platforms, and these platforms send out these reminders. The interesting thing is, I suppose the question should be, who would do it and why? Facebook notoriously, according to Dr. Robert Epstein, sent out reminders to every Democrat in one election and only around 59% of Republicans. The accusation, I believe the number, I could be wrong on those numbers, but the general accusation is Facebook is manipulating the election by telling people to go vote if they vote in the right way. By reminding every Democrat and only some Republicans, you will increase the amount of Democrat votes relative to Republican ones. So you have to wonder who might do this. Now, that being said, this may not be a cyber attack. We don't know for sure, but it is highly suspect that there's this massive outage right now. Everybody gets logged out on Super Tuesday, one of the most important election days in a presidential cycle. The Independent reports Facebook, Instagram, Messenger down. Meta platforms suddenly stop working in a huge outage. Now, there have been some people saying YouTube and X are down as well. I believe Down Detector is showing a minor outage, but it appears to be a blip and the platforms never stopped working for me. And for all of you, you're watching this on YouTube right now. The Independent says users found themselves unable to load the apps or websites as normal on Facebook. Affected users found they had been logged out and were unable to get on. Well, Instagram refused to work at all. The warnings about being logged out led to widespread concern among users that their accounts had been hacked, and a variety of concerned phrases trended on Twitter and X. But the error message appeared to be the result of problems with Facebook's login system, not a hack or cyber attack. Again, that being said, when it comes to the AT&T outage, the media has largely tried to downplay these, despite the fact they're being investigated as cyber attacks. I don't know, or I should say the AT&T hack was. There's currently a cyber attack against our healthcare system. It's still underway. I think there are interests in media to downplay this out of fear of escalation into war at a time when we're dealing with internal political disputes. And it's not a war that the establishment wants. They want the war in Ukraine. But I don't know. I don't know for sure. I just think it's in their interest to downplay it. You've got the corporate press saying, no, no, the AT&T outage was not a cyber attack, they think. And I'm just like, why is the corporate press reporting that the AT&T outage is definitively not a cyber attack when all we know for sure is that AT&T said they don't believe it was? That's not proof of anything. Why is the media saying that? So for now, there is speculation it is not a cyber attack. And it is the assumption and it is the hypothesis it is. We don't have any evidence to suggest it is. It is only because it's Super Tuesday that a lot of people are wondering, how could this have happened and why on a day like today? Meta does not run official status pages for its consumer products, and it was yet to post any update on the outage on its official accounts, such as those on Twitter and X, which is why I don't see why they're claiming it is not a cyber attack. They just wrote that. There's no evidence to suggest it is or isn't. Speculation is that it is because of the day. Interesting. Tracking website Down Detector showed vast outages as Instagram, Facebook, and Messenger on Thursday. However, the problems were spotted across the world, suggesting the outage could be global. Sure, whatever. Here's Down Detector right now. As we can see, Facebook experienced a massive spike, but the spike appears to be going down. Google, Verizon, T-Mobile, Google Play, X, AT&T had a minor spike, not really. Threads, WhatsApp, Oculus, Gmail, TikTok, Snapchat, Pokemon Go, Reddit, Honeywell, Valorant. Okay, full stop. All of these systems on Down Detector, I shouldn't say all of them because SAP Concur seems to be fine. Let's refresh here. They seem to be experiencing major outage spikes. Why are all of these systems getting hit? It could be that something utilized by X and Meta, by Meta Systems, something they were using went down and it's used by many other companies. Even Twitter, I like how they put X and they put Twitter in parentheses, was reported 897 outages, but 897, not that much. When you go to Facebook, Facebook's way different. 532,129. So let's break down how something like this could happen, and then we'll talk about where we're currently at with cyber attacks. And I do have updates on cyber attacks that are currently underway in the United States. Let me put it this way. Some people likely did see T-Mobile, X, AT&T, Google, whatever go down, but not that many. So no one cares. Discord outages reported 4,660. That's massive. We had an AT&T outage a week ago, and now Facebook, and we're supposed to just assume everything's normal? Okay. I'm going to play this game with you, corporate press. Either we're under a cyber attack. What's that? That's a conspiracy theory? Fine. Then it's diversity, equity, and inclusivity programs resulting in people who don't know how to do their jobs. Pick one. Because why are we having massive outages 2 weeks in a row? Or I shouldn't say 2 weeks in a row, but within the span of a couple weeks. Here's what I think happens. Whatever it is that went down negatively impacted Meta more than everybody else. And because there are 500,000 people reporting the outage, the media picks it up. I'll put it simply. If 500,000 people go protest in the street, everyone's going to hear about it. If 5,000 protest, you might hear about it, maybe not. And so that's what's happening right now. It seems like the outages did affect a ton of different platforms, including Gmail. Gmail outages reported up to 542, not that big. T-Mobile outages, 1,000, not that big. Instagram outages, 83,680. And now people are going to start saying, yo, what is going on? Here's the big news. It's Super Tuesday. On Super Tuesday, Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia will be voting in their primaries. It's a very important day to send out those get out the vote reminders to have the social media network go down. Now, we'll get into all this, but let's wrap up just a little bit here, which is really funny. Oh, hey, look, March 8th, American Samoa. Fantastic. Over on X, Andy Stone, who works for Meta, tweets, "We're aware people are having trouble accessing our services. We are working on this now." I just love the idea that they're not using Threads to let everybody know what's going on. That Meta staff use X to tell people what's going on with their platform going down is just oh so funny. And then, of course, we have Elon Musk getting savage, saying, if you're reading this post, it's because our servers are working. And you have many other X staffers being like, ain't no problem here. Let me show you one of Elon Musk's tweets, his posts. And it's the penguins from Madagascar, I think. And you've got Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. Underneath it, Andy Stone saying, we're aware people are having trouble accessing our services. And then X over the general penguin. There's three penguins, and one of them is a general. Elon Musk posted a meme making fun of them. It's very, very funny. So I don't know if this is a cyber attack. I would lean towards there's a decent probability, but it doesn't mean much. There are powerful interests around the world that subverting our elections would be good for them. And it could go either way. I mean, if Facebook is heavily supporting Democrats, as they've been in the past, then it stands to reason that whoever would cyber attack Facebook Meta Systems while defending X would be biased in favor of Trump. No, for sure. At the same time, attacking our grid could just be a general attack on our grid. I don't know. I really don't. Shutting down communication on Facebook, which primarily is older people, could also negatively impact Trump as well. Here's what I find funny. Axios, reporting on the AT&T outage, said AT&T outage was not a cyber attack. Really? A definitive statement headline with quotation marks for some reason. Why? Here's what they report. AT&T says Thursday's outage, which left thousands of customers without service, was not a cyber attack, the company believes. And there it is. They're not saying they have proof it was not. They're saying they don't think it was. Okay. I'm not saying it has to be. I'm not trying to tell everybody that it is or isn't. I'm saying the media is reporting it definitively when we don't know. The FCC, DHS, and FBI are reportedly all investigating the incident on Thursday, which may have led people to assume it was a cyber attack. In fact, Eric Prince on the Valuetainment podcast says he thinks it was China that did it. White House spokesperson John Kirby said there was no reason to think the incident was due to a cybersecurity issue. although AT&T is still investigating the root cause. Some people chatted into IRL saying they worked with the company and that it was a software update gone bad. Okay, let's go ahead and assume software update gone bad. And then Facebook and Instagram, Meta, goes bad within, I don't know, another week and a half. Okay, fine, I guess. I just think it's kind of weird that all this is happening right now. Marco Rubio warned when this went down, when AT&T shut down, that a Chinese cyber attack will be 100 times worse than AT&T outage, your power and your water. He's right. You don't got to like Marco Rubio, but he's right. There are things to consider. If we get hit with a cyber attack, it doesn't need to be like a nuclear bomb going off. It could be AT&T getting shut down. Phase one. Let's start with the first level. What is the purpose of a cyber attack? Disrupting communications, disrupting finance, disrupting business. In the event of war, shutting down communications is one of the scariest things because it allows the assailants to get a leg up and prevent us from making preparing countermeasures. So if there is a cyber attack against our communication infrastructure, that is potentially precipitating physical strikes. Could be scary. But let's talk about the darker issue at play. I think we're at war, and I think war is a state that we're always in, but to varying degrees. You could argue that war is when the conflict crosses a certain threshold, fair point. But China has been cyber attacking the United States forever. So is Russia, so is Iran, all of our adversaries. Why? Why cyber attack AT&T outside of a military context? Shutting down communications shuts down economic activity, shuts down development of U.S. projects and expansion. You see, the military-industrial complex still relies on this system. We may print money and hand it out to them so they can build tanks, but someone's got to get the materials for those tanks, which means they need the entirety of U.S. economic infrastructure to facilitate the construction of weapons and otherwise. If China were to shut down communications, that means business deals aren't happening. That means transactions aren't happening. That means you walk to the store and say, I'd like to order a sandwich. And they go, sorry, our readers, our machine's down. And you go, I only bought my credit card. Sorry. If this inhibits economic growth by even a fraction of a percentage, it advantages our enemies. And so that may be what's happening. I don't know for sure. It doesn't have to be as bad as Rubio's warning. If we enter full-scale war, then don't be surprised if, yeah, it gets real bad real quick. And you wake up one day and your power's out. There's no communications. You turn the TV on, nothing. It's one of the scarier things about getting off analog. Will people's televisions be able to actually pick up analog signals through emergency broadcast or otherwise? I'm assuming they've got systems in place for this. But if we were about to be attacked, I'd imagine every country's grid goes down. Here's what I think. We know about industrial control system hacks. They're called ICS, industrial control systems. 12 years ago, I went to the DEF CON and Black Hat conventions. And working with Vice, we interviewed some people who showed us how to blow up industrial control systems from 40 miles away. My assumption is every major country has remote access tools within their enemy's infrastructure. Why wouldn't you? You can't defend against this. That means I'm willing to bet U.S. water electric infrastructure, water reclamation plants, water pumps, chemical pumps. I'm going to bet that Russia, China, Iran, they've got malware and their finger is over the button. And they can press it at any moment to either shut it down or blow it up. I think that's a reasonable assessment. Look at Stuxnet. Iranian nuclear centrifuges overloaded and exploded. How did they do it? Many of you may not remember Stuxnet. This was maybe, 14 years ago now. It's crazy. This is a virus believed to have been... Actually, let me pull this up. I'll tell you the story of Stuxnet. Terrifying, really. It's 2010. Yeah, okay, developed in 2005. So it's 14 years ago this story breaks. A malicious computer worm first uncovered in 2010 and thought to have been in development since at least 2005. Stuxnet targets supervisory control and data acquisition, SCADA systems, and is believed to be responsible for causing substantial damage to the nuclear program in Iran. Although neither country has openly admitted responsibility. Multiple independent news organizations believe it was built by the U.S. and Israel in a collaborative effort known as Operation Olympic Games. The program started during the Bush administration, was rapidly expanded in the first months of Barack Obama's presidency. It specifically targets programmable logic controllers, which allow the automation of electromechanical processes, such as those to control machinery and industrial processes, including gas centrifuges for separating nuclear material, exploiting 4 zero-day flaws. Stuxnet functions by targeting machines using Microsoft Windows operating system and networks, then seeking out Siemens Step 7 software. Stuxnet reportedly compromised Iranian's PLCs, collecting information on industrial systems and causing the fast-spinning centrifuges to tear themselves apart. Stuxnet's design and architecture are not domain-specific, and it could be tailored as a platform for attacking modern SCADA and PLC systems, blah, blah, blah. Let me slow down. Here's where it was really interesting. The general idea was that everything was infected. Everything. The Stuxnet virus was created and released into the wild, but it would not do anything until it found specific Iranian systems. As the story goes, you may have had maybe Stuxnet on your computer right now. I'm sure at this point, most antivirus softwares have purged it. But the idea was that they released it onto general computers, seriously, like regular people. And it spread itself very secretly until finally someone connected their Iranian systems to their networks and they had a compromised system. Then it took effect. They said it had three modules, a worm that executes all routines related to the main payload, a link file that automatically executes the propagated copies of the worm, and a rootkit component responsible for hiding all malicious files and processes. It typically introduced the target environment via an infected USB flash drive crossing any air gap. The worm then propagates across the network, scanning for Siemens Step 7 software on computers controlling a PLC. In the absence of either criterion, Stuxnet becomes dormant inside the computer. If both conditions are fulfilled, Stuxnet introduces the infected rootkit onto the PLC and Step 7 software, modifying the code and giving unexpected commands to the PLC while returning a loop of normal operation system values back to the user. Here's why I'm telling you about this. The reality is, there probably are many dormant, apocalyptic weapons, malicious code infecting all of our machines that we cannot find. We don't know we're there. If you think a 2005 developed weapon discovered in 2010 is the end all be all of subversive malware to destroy economics and industrial systems and communications, you are insane. If anything, this is the tip of the iceberg. There are probably dozens or hundreds of comparable weapons ready right now for someone to press a button and your power goes out. It's a Mexican standoff and everybody knows it. You know, when we talk about Russia, a lot of people are deeply concerned about nuclear weapons. And I think to myself, this is ancient technology. We're talking about weapons developed 80 years ago. 80 years ago. Could you imagine if in World War II, they were like, someone's going to bring in a catapult? You'd be like, what? Okay, sure. 80 years before that, cannon fire. We might run into people launching cannons from their man o' war off the coast. Huh? No. We knew about mechanized, industrialized warfare. By World War II, fully automatic rifles, mass production of weapons, industrial-level war was in its second stage. And then someone dropped, the United States did, atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The bombs we used those days are nothing. The current nuclear weapons that we know about, they have 1,250 times the explosive power of the bombs used in World War II. And that was as of the 70s. Are we really to believe that 50 years on, we've not developed more insane weapons of mass destruction? The reality is just no one's going to know about it. The reason the U.S. used the bombs, one of them, is that they wanted the world to know that we had them. And if you raised a fist against us, we would wipe out your entire population. And then the Cold War happened and both sides had very powerful nukes. Tsar Bomba, reportedly being the most powerful, never even reaching its full capacity. And that was called a gravity bomb, dropped from a plane. The blast was so expansive and powerful that the plane that dropped it would fall 2 kilometers in the air straight down from the shockwave. Crazy. So what weapons do they have today? And why would we assume they're using this ancient technology? And it's not literally ancient. Right now, Meta went down. The reality is an intern probably spilled the coffee. Seriously. And now they're all freaking out, like, you shorted the machine, you spilled the coffee. And that's really it. Because it's infinitely more likely. That being said, it is Super Tuesday. And of all the days for something like this to happen, it seems strange that it's happening now. You want to talk about cyber war? If cyber war were to really kick off, it'd be worse than you realize. Cyber attack continues to plague Montana pharmacies. Hackers behind the Change Healthcare ransomware received a $22 million payment. This is from yesterday. We are constantly under cyber attack. There was several months ago, MGM, I believe it was, casinos got hit by a massive ransomware attack, shutting down their computers. It was back to the old days. If you went to play games, it was all cash. Wild. How did they even track that the money? It's crazy. I fear what will happen if war really does break out and people aren't prepared for it. There will be no internet. There will be no communications. You'll wake up one day with no electricity and ain't nobody going to be watching a show like this. For now, we don't know what's going on. And by the time you watch this, maybe it's been resolved. But don't forget to go vote Super Tuesday. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 4 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. This has to be one of the most embarrassing clips Bill Maher has ever put out. And he put out a lot of doozies. This is Bill Maher addressing something Jack Posobiec said at CPAC, where Jack made a joke, very obviously, about ending democracy. It's a very obvious joke, the way he said it. He was chuckling. Everyone in the crowd was laughing. Bill Maher took it seriously because he's not a smart man. He doesn't do research. He just saw a quote and didn't understand the context, probably because the quote came from CNN or MSNBC, and his staff are too stupid, and Bill Maher is too lazy to actually watch the clip. It's embarrassing. Bill Maher's got many doozies, such as when Dennis Prager came on the show and said that there are leftists claiming men menstruate. And Bill and all of the liberals go, ho, 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 as if they didn't know, because perhaps they didn't. Sure enough, when this show aired, several years prior, there had been numerous mainstream corporate press, high-profile, well-funded outlets with millions of views saying men do menstruate. And there you are. Bill Maher doesn't know how to use Google. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to play this clip for you so you can laugh. And it's fascinating because I have to wonder, you know, when I was younger, when I was 19, I watched Bill Maher all the time. My friends loved it. The question is, was he always this lazy and stupid? I don't see why we should assume he was ever better at his job than he is today. I think the issue is we just didn't have the same level of communication to realize Bill Maher is not a very smart person. Well, here's the clip. Myth Informed has it, and I'll play it for you now. PAC.
Do you know what that is? That is the conservative, what is it?
Unfortunately.
What is PAC?
Political Action Committee.
Political Action Committee. Okay. Yeah. It's their big convention every year. It's like corporations have a big convention. They have their big convention. I made jokes about it every year. I can't remember the last time we did it. It goes way back. I remember once calling it the Woodstock for the mentally impaired.
The Woodstock for the mentally impaired. Now listen to what the crowd and the guests say when Bill Maher is this dumb.
And but in years past, it was like the most conservative commentators and senators and governors. And okay, this year there's a guy, I've heard this name, I don't know who he is, Jack Posobiec. He's doing sort of like a roundtable discussion, you know, it's a convention, they have these things.
He was on stage.
This is a quote: "Welcome to the end of democracy. We are here to overthrow it completely. We didn't get all the way there on January 6th. But we will endeavor to get rid of it." Am I missing an irony here? am I missing a joke? Or is it, as it seems now, they are saying the quiet part out loud?
Oh, these people are insane! Even reading it dryly, like just, we are, welcome to the end of democracy. We're here to overthrow it. We didn't quite get there on January 6th, but we will endeavor. Even reading it as dry as you can, welcome to the end. There's no way you can say that without someone being like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
That they are not. This is CPAC. This is their big, this is Republican, conservative, their big convention. And you have a guy like this and the crowd is loving it. Welcome to the end of democracy. We're here to overthrow it. January 6th was good. Now we're going to finish the job. Thoughts?
It's scary.
Thoughts on that?
Bill, that was a joke about Trump making a joke about being a dictator day one in office. That is an ironic take on how the liberal media.
Well, that was my question. Am I missing the irony?
Conservatives, I think so. Yes, it's a joke.
Really?
But, yeah, and I think more.
Oh,
I mean, more
my
to the
God.
Point, to you, Bill, and to
keep your day job, Jack.
No, Bill, you should quit your day job. That I'm flabbergasted. I want to play that last little bit again.
It's scary.
Thoughts on that?
Bill, that was a
they all laugh. Ha ha.
Joke about Trump making a joke about being a dictator day one in office. That is an ironic take on how the liberal media.
Well, that was my question. Am I missing the irony?
Conservative.
This is Jack Posobiec. Jack, you have scored some kind of like inception level mockery of liberal political pundits. I am in awe. I am jealous of the sheer accomplishment of Jack Posobiec here. Let me break this one down for you. Jack was making a rather simple joke. They accuse the right of trying to overthrow democracy and all this other stuff. So he goes on stage and makes the simple joke. We're here to overthrow democracy, right? That's what they're saying about us. Let's elaborate. That's the general idea. They claim you want to overthrow it. Sure, that's the plan. We almost did it on January 6th. Ha ha ha. The joke was he is insulting the likes of Bill Maher. Bill Maher walks face first into a wall. That is Jack Posobiec's joke. And Jack scored some kind of like double hit. It's as though the batter in the baseball swung one time, but hit two home runs somehow. I can't even. I can't even. Bill Maher walking right into a joke meant to insult people like Bill Maher, to which we now insult him further, is just absolutely insane. And his audience laughing about it. Wow. You see, this is what's wrong with Democrats in this country. Even the likes of Bill Maher, who is anti-woke to a certain degree, he is too lazy and too stupid to do the work. And again, I know people often say, Tim, if you insult these people, they'll never come on your show. I'm not sure I care. I've had people, as I mentioned before, say, Tim, you got to go on Bill Maher's show. And I'm like, why? You know, look, I host a show. It is consistently the largest live audience on YouTube for the slot, which, to be fair, like doesn't say as much. You know, cable TV used to get way more live viewers, but we do like we're averaging around like 45,000 a night right now in an election year. Once we get closer to November, it'll probably be massive because we saw in 2020. This is basically our Olympics, right? The election is here. That's what we do when we talk politics. So we have a decently large show. And I have people say, Tim, why don't you go on Bill Maher? And I say, for the same reason, I don't go and debate sixth graders. It's a waste of my time to sit in a room in front of a bunch of gawking, ignorant individuals who lack the capability to do basic research. Bill Maher knows so little about politics, so absolutely little, it would serve no one for I or anyone else to go on his show. That being said, real time. Club Random, I've actually offered to actually go on Club Random. I'll tell you why. My point about Real Time with Bill Maher is that he's got poorly researched bits. That's a Batya Unger Sargon who's pointing out, Bill, that's a joke. How does he not see that? Because he's lazy, he doesn't care, and he's going for grifter points. Why would I want to go on Real Time where you get some ignorant liberals who will probably outright lie, won't fact check, and the audience will just laugh along like clowns, like children clapping along to a clown throwing a pie? It accomplishes nothing. In fact, it makes things worse. That being said, Club Random, I will sit in a chair and have a conversation with the man, and I will say everything I'm saying now to his face. Unfortunately, my willingness to have said these things likely precludes me from ever appearing on that show. Bill Maher was coming to DC and we reached out to see if he'd be willing to come on the show. He said, no, that I don't blame him for. He was doing a comedy show. You don't want to do a late night talk show before you're getting ready to do stand up or whatever. So I can respect that. I can. Same is true for Hassan or any other leftist. They don't owe me to come on my show and they host their own shows. They're busy people. Totally get it. for the same reason I don't go on other people's shows all that often. But we reached out to Bill to have him on either IRL or the Culture War podcast at his any earliest convenience. And his people said, unfortunately, we just don't have the schedule. We can't do it. So we said, when can you? And they said, we don't know when Bill will be available on the East Coast. And we said, no problem. We will bring our mobile production studio to California and Bill can simply walk in a trailer for 2 hours. And they said, no. Why? Because Bill Maher will be humiliated. I will say that again. If Bill Maher were to ever sit down with me one-on-one, it would be humiliating for the man. And this is why we even said, how about Tim goes on Club Random and Bill, no, they won't do it. For the same reason that many other leftists will not come on this show, they will be humiliated. Bill Maher, I think, will be particularly humiliated. I mean, this is embarrassing. I'm going to play this again.
Was my question. Am I missing the irony?
Conservatives, I think so.
This is my question. Am I missing the irony here? Oh, you can see it in his face. He's realizing he just read a line that was an obvious joke with Jack Posobiec chuckling as he said it to an audience laughter. And he is so cult-minded and stupid. He walked right into it. You know what he was thinking right there? When Badia said, Bill, that's a joke. Bill's thinking, my writers, these writers, they just screwed me. I'm on TV and it was an obvious joke. Boy, do I look stupid. So what's his only saving grace?
Conservatives. I think so. Yes, it's a joke.
Really?
But yeah. And I think more to the point. Okay. To you, Bill, and to
keep your day job, Jack.
Keep your day job, Jack. That's it. Poor little old Bill could only say, well, your joke wasn't funny. I laughed. When you watch the video, Jack's chuckling as he makes this. I got to be honest. When Jack said that joke, we're here to overthrow democracy. We didn't get there on January 6th, but, you know, we will endeavor. It's no offense, Jack. It's kind of an obvious joke. It's not like we didn't expect the punchline. It is the obvious quip against the liberal media. I don't even think Jack spent a lot of time coming up with it. He probably came up with it off the top of his head and was like, that's funny. I'll do that bit as I'm at CPAC. And he did. And we all chuckled and moved on. And the left, in their ever insanity, were like, they want to overthrow democracy. And Bill, here's what happened. I'll tell you. Bill's got staff and they're really stupid. And they heard this on CNN and they heard them say, can you believe it? At CPAC, they're saying they'll overthrow democracy. And then you get Micah Brzezinski being like, and there it is. They've admitted it. The producer then writes for Bill Maher, look at this. They said they want to overthrow democracy. And Bill's like, wow. And then Bill goes on his show and in complete buffoonery is humiliated because he was too lazy to do a Google search. Because if you watched the clip, he'd be like, what? What are you talking about? The guy's joking. It's clearly not literal. He's not giving a speech and banging his fist on a podium. Yep. You gotta love it. Ah, these poor, poor, pathetic morons. You know, look, man, I'm willing to have that conversation with Bill Maher, but he is so past his prime and out of the loop and incompetent, lazy, incapable, and ignorant. I'm not saying he's not without talent. I'm saying at this point in his career, look, man, let me tell you, it happens to everybody. It really does. Okay. You know, when I was in my 20s, when I was my late teens skateboarding, I'd jump off a building. Don't you forget it. Now, I'm going to be 38 in 4 days. And now I mostly just do basics. I got a handful of tricks I'm pretty good at. I can still jump really high. It's still there, you know. Tony Hawk's in his 50s and he's still got it. He's not doing 900s like he used to. But you see, when you get older, you start to, you know, it just happens to everybody. And so I'm 38, man. I'm well into aging territory. I know I'm not as old as a lot of older people. I get these people who are 50s like, you're a young man. I'm like, look, I think it's cute when old people say 38 is young, but let's be real. Aging sets in between around 28 to 32 or whatever is when you are no longer regenerating at maximum capacity. So I'm certainly not old, but I'm not going to pretend like I'm going to be throwing myself off buildings and competing in the X Games. Bill Maher, how old is this guy? Let's pull up. He's in his 60s, right? Bill Maher, 68 years old. He's nearly 70 years old. Look, Bill, you've lost touch. You're tired. You're no longer doing the work. And you're making a fool of yourself. At a certain point, you just say, I'm done. Now, I'll tell you. In the Timcast timeline, there's no real like prime moment just yet, being 38, but there was a period where I worked every single day with no days off. And for the first year, maybe even the first 2 years, the first year of Timcast IRL, I worked Sunday to Monday. That means every single day I had my morning show, an hour and 40 minutes. Monday through Friday, we had Timcast IRL, but we weren't doing the members only. So this means I was working from about 8 to 4 p.m. and then eating, and I wasn't exercising as much, and then doing IRL at night. I would get to bed a little bit earlier because we weren't doing the members only. So now we still have added the extra hour, but now I don't work on weekends. But IRL is bigger than it's ever been. Granted, end of 2020 was massive and it was insane, but that was a huge moment in 2020. We'll see what happens as this year progresses. My point is, there will come a time where I recognize I'm going to start slowing down, focusing more on family, and I won't be doing the show as heavy as I do it today. I have no problem. I'll put it this way. If I was 68 years old, hosting Timcast IRL, and I had heard that someone screamed, I will destroy this country and burn it to the ground, I'd say, are they being for real with this? Like, what's going on? We had a moment a couple of years ago where Jacobin Magazine, for which I subscribe, had a picture of Joe Biden as Jesus, and we made fun of it. Within a few minutes, we got corrected by the audience saying, guys, they're being ironic. You missed the joke. And I laughed and said, I was like, my bad. I didn't realize that Jacobin, because there were many leftists who were saying, Joe Biden, you got to vote for him. I didn't realize they were insulting him. And that's on me. But we were reading all this stuff in real time. That's an issue of looking at an image and missing the context. Bill Maher got this secondhand. Because if he actually looked at the image, he would have realized Jack was joking. And that's the point. It's fair to say we all make mistakes. It's fair to say you can misinterpret things. But when we pulled up the Jacobin cover, I was looking at it being like, are these people serious? Like, is this real? I can't believe these people praise this guy the way they do. I wasn't familiar with Jacobin Magazine. And I'm willing to admit, I'm not free from fault here. We've gotten things wrong all the time. But Bill Maher didn't even bother to Google search this. And the point here is he does this a lot. Now, far be it for me to say everyone's perfect. Again, we have our mistakes, but you get to a certain point where you're commenting on politics without reading the news and you start to look like a moron. And that, Bill Maher, is where you're currently at. And I think he knows it. I think Bill, when he winced and was like, did I miss something here? And she's like, yeah, it's like, well, that's what I meant. I mean, I was asking, did I miss something? No, you didn't. No, that's not what you meant. You thought it was real because someone handed you a card. You didn't look into it at all. You came on and you put on your clown costume and you juggled because you're 68. You should basically be retired at this point. You don't care about what's going on in politics. You're half paying attention and you just got embarrassed. Jeez. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up. What is it? Next segment at 6 p.m. Thanks for hanging out and I'll see you all then. Perhaps there is no more duplicitous of a member of Congress than AOC. But I think maybe that's unfair because you can certainly shout out Jamie Raskin and Adam Schiff. But AOC's livid because far left activists demanded that she call what's going on in Israel-Palestine a genocide against the Palestinians. AOC, of course, will not do this. And so activists confront her with their phones recording and say, will you call what is happening in Palestine a genocide? And she goes, this is effed up. How dare you? The reason is, About a month ago, AOC defended other people calling what's going on in the Hamas war a genocide against Palestinians, but refused to say it herself, being accused of dodging the question. Now, some outlets say AOC defends the word genocide the use of the word and differs with other members of Congress. But of course, she herself would not say it. And so activists got angry, confronted her, and she snapped. Here's the best part. The reason why this is a story, AOC is famous for her post about how activism is supposed to make people uncomfortable, and you just need to accept it. Accept it, AOC. This is what you get. You reap what you sow. The New York Post reports AOC snaps at NYC protesters at movie theater demanding she call Israel's military campaign in Gaza a genocide. It's effed up. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's the video. We will play for you and you can see it for yourself. AOC unable to handle a confrontation over, well, I mean, she claims these are her political values, but the important thing to understand here, aside from the hypocrisy, AOC was very big on the Israel-Palestine stuff before getting elected. After she gets elected to Congress, she moderated her position, still rather left, but actually began to more defend Israel. Many far-left activists took issue with this back in, this was what, 2018, 2019? Here's the clip.
You refuse to call it a genocide in front of
everybody. I need you to understand.
This is not okay.
There's a genocide happening. You're not actively against it.
You're lying.
I'm lying.
You're not.
You're lying. He said there's a genocide happening, and she said you're lying. Now, hold on there a minute. Far-left activists are probably going to take that to be her saying there's no genocide happening, but I don't know what she's saying. I think she's trying to claim she did call it a genocide.
What are you talking about?
He was not acting against it. It's a genocide. What you're acting on political base. If you can't call it a genocide, then how do you say we're not lying?
We're not lying.
You've been saying it in interviews. It's insane. You haven't been calling it a genocide. Don't tell me I'm lying. Then just say it's a genocide. Just say it. Over 30,000 people are dead, AOC. You can't just say it for once. Just say the word. That's it. That's all we want you to say.
Say the word.
Or are you not angry about people confronting you in public, but you can't call it genocide? Over 30,000 people have died.
Stop. Stop. Okay? Stop. Stop.
Stop. Stop. That's her fiance or husband. Here's where AOC loses it.
Cut it, and you're going to cut this, and you're going to clip this so that it's completely out of context. I already said that it was, and y'all are just going to pretend that it wasn't over and over again. It's fucked up, man. You're not helping these people, and you're not helping them.
You refuse to.
I already said that it was. Okay, I'll take it. That's a statement where AOC says what is going on in Palestine is a genocide.
Yeah.
She won't say the word genocide, but let her say that. This is the famous tweet from AOC in its full context. She said, what if activists aren't PR firms for politicians and their demands are because police budgets are exploding? Community resources are shrinking to bankroll, and people brought this up for ages, but it wasn't until they said defund that comfortable people started paying attention to brutality. The thing that critics of activists don't get is that they tried playing the polite language policy game, and all it did was make them easier to ignore. It wasn't until they made folks uncomfortable that there was traction to do anything, even if it wasn't their full demands. The whole point of protesting is to make people uncomfortable. Activists take that discomfort with the status quo and advocate for concrete policy changes. Popular support often starts small and grows. To folks who complain, protest demands make others uncomfortable. That's the point. Cry more, AOC. Take a look at this. I love this. Huffington Post. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez dodges question about genocide label in Israel-Gaza conflict. The progressive congresswoman wouldn't directly say whether she believed Israel's unrelenting bombardment of Gaza was a genocide, but she defended its use. Why won't she say it? Now look, I'm going to play this video clip for you. Here's one. Harry's Place tweeted, is it possible to care about Palestine too much? I don't necessarily need to give a trigger warning. I'll give you a volume warning. I don't know how loud this one's going to be, but you've been warned.
You should be enraged! You should be enraged! You should be enraged at the genocide that is going on!
You better calm down, young lady.
You should be enraged at the genocide that is going on?
All right, now that I've played it for you twice, the issue that I often bring up, I have concerns about what is going on between Israel and Gaza. I've heard the arguments, and I am rather tepid on the issue. And let me tell you, you know, Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th. And this has been a war that's been going on for a very, very long time. It didn't just start yesterday. It didn't start in October. And you can go back to 1967. You can go back to the Balfour Declaration, all that stuff. And it's like war in the region, baby. One side appears to be winning. But I can keep it really simple for you before I give any more opinions on this. I am not Israel. I am not Palestine. We are the United States. And I'm more concerned about our southern border than what's going on over there. That being said, if you want to criticize the Israeli military, you're allowed to do it. If you want to criticize the deaths of civilians and collateral damage, by all means, please do so. There were atrocities committed by Hamas, which has like it has plurality or majority support slightly in Gaza. And these are people who went in and just started killing random people because they're all colonizers. My point is this. There is certainly a war going on with debates on all sides over who is right and who is wrong. And I'm just sitting here being like, don't know, don't care. Seriously, I am an American citizen. I care about what's going on with America. I want to secure our borders. I want to bring back jobs. I don't understand why these people are so obsessed with this country. But I'll tell you what triggers me and fills me with blinding rage. Cult members, zealots. That pisses me off. You know why? Well, the humanitarian crisis in Yemen is considered to be one of the worst humanitarian crises ever. You've got Burma with, hundreds of thousands being killed so far. You've, I don't know, how about the Uyghur Muslims? So when crackpot lunatics like this woman, who is a psychopath, deranged, screaming, you should be upset. I'm like, oh, should I be upset over the Uyghur Muslims? Should I be upset over Sudan? Should I be upset over Boko Haram? Should I be upset over the cartels? Should I be upset over CBP trafficking children into this country? Should I be upset over Burma? Should I be upset over insert every single humanitarian crisis on the planet? You psychopaths need to shut the up. You're allowed to be upset about any one of those issues. You're allowed to be an activist on any one of those issues. But don't lie to me and say it's a genocide and that's why we're upset. No, if the issue is genocide, you'd be upset over a whole bunch of other countries. Now, of course, I have friends who are very, very critical of Israel. They're allowed to be. And I'm not talking about them when they say, hey, look, this airstrike killed these people. I'm like, look, man, there's war going on. Criticize them all day and night. My point is, when I ask people like this, she's screaming and ranting. Do you care about any other country? They don't know. They just don't. And that's what annoys the hell out of me. Zealotry. Psychotic zealotry. Now, if there's somebody who is Jewish or Israeli and they're upset at these activists, well, I get it. They're being targeted by them. If there's an American conservative who is not Israeli, has no ties to the region, and is ranting about Israel, I'd be equally as concerned. But you don't really seem to see a lot of that. You do see, well, I should say, put it this way. You don't see as much of it. It exists. Don't get me wrong. Politicians coming out saying things like Israel is the Holy Land or whatever, because Christian and Jews have a religious interest in the region. Totally get it. That's probably why people are so psychotically obsessed. But I'll make this argument all day and night, dude. I'm an American citizen. I care as much about Israel as I do about, I don't know, Burma. And that is very little. I'm concerned with it because I don't like people dying. I'm concerned with it because these things can bleed out into larger conflict, which can, it could spark wars, serious wars. The Houthi rebels bombing cargo ships in the Red Sea is very, very bad for international trade and could result in escalation of war in the region. Not a fan. But that's about it. I'm not going to go protest for a country I don't live in. I am not going to demand a politician call it a genocide or not. I think that's absurd. I'm concerned that our politicians don't care about our southern border. I'm more concerned that AOC is in favor of importing criminal aliens. So I'm not here to get into an argument over Israel, Palestine or anything like that. But I do think it's fair to point out people are obsessed. There is this derangement pertaining to Israel, which is just mind-blowing to me. When, you know, it's funny because we get it in both directions. People accusing us of hating Israel and supporting the Jews. It's just the funniest thing. They're like, did you know that Timcast IRL, 20% of their guests are Jewish? And I'm like, well, they're a religious group in this country who have overlapping political views with many Christians. So not surprised that's happening. OK, but then you get people who attack, you know, like, say, Cassandra Fairbanks, who's very critical of Israel. And they say that Timcast opposes. No, I'll tell you right now, Timcast doesn't care. I don't care. This lady, you can go. Why don't you go to Five Guys, order five double cheeseburgers and just slam all of them and eat. I don't care what you do. I don't care whether you're having a good time eating cheeseburgers or in the street screaming about a country you've never been to. Y'all are in a cult. That's the wildest thing about it. Why can't these people be so fervent about the country we live in? Whatever. You reap what you sow, AOC. I'll leave it there. Next segment is coming up at 8 p.m. over at youtube.com/timcastirl. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then.